Again, our next case is 823-0553, Kramer versus Kramer, or Kramer versus Kramer. As all parties are aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief. Respondent will have 15 minutes. Finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. This matter is being both live streamed and will be available for an audio recording, but our rules prohibit anyone making a private recording, so please keep that in mind. With that, counsel for the appellant, whenever you're ready, please begin by telling us who you are in a loud voice, sir. Mr. Wettering, you're muted.
Thank you, Judge. May it please the court, my name is Bill Wettering. I'm here for the appellant in this dissolution matter. I'm seeking reversal and remand to calculate interest on a May 2015 award in a family law case. The analysis of this case is limited to family law cases with awards before August of 2015 that are not subject to stipulation. The 2014 version of Minnesota Statute 54909 is the controlling statute here. Upon an award of more of money in a family law case, the court administrator is to calculate or compute interest pursuant to paragraph C of the statute and add it to the award. Paragraph C2 dictates that when there are awards over $50,000, the interest rate shall be 10% per year until paid. The same rate shall apply to prejudgment interest per paragraph B, which also refers to paragraph C. Now, prior versions of this statute accepted prejudgment interest in family law cases, later versions of this statute accepted family law cases completely from the 10% portion of the statute and left that up to the court. Now, when this case fell with an order dated May 28th, 2015, with an entry of judgment of June 1st of 2015, and so the 2014 version of the statute applies, and that is what we have always argued in this case. The court below, without mention of 54909, the district court ordered respondent owed no interest at all because the trial judge had not ordered interest in his order. And the court applied an irrelevant holding in a court of appeals case where a different version of 54909 was in play. That case was Erickson, and it's really the only substantive case that the court relied upon besides the statement that the court hadn't ordered interest. And I'll talk about Erickson, but I want to make clear, first of all, that as the court knows from application of 54909 recently over the last several years, it's a pretty broad statute, and it's been interpreted to apply to all cases unless they're specifically accepted from the statute. And I think you will find that in the recitation of the cases that we supplied to the court. And I imagine those of you on this court have seen this issue come up.
Counsel, does it matter that the J&B did not set a deadline for payment or sale?
I think it only matters on the argument of that the respondent in the case wants to call this a marital lien and say it's strictly a marital lien and therefore somehow is accepted from the application of 54909. And if you read the court's order, the court says respondent shall pay $750,000. Respondent shall pay $168,000 in attorney's fees. It says that straight away. Then it says respondent shall have a security by virtue of a lien in the real estate and a lien on the equipment and grain and so forth to secure that. That's not a marital lien where you say that respondent gets the house subject to a lien and the wife, and when the son graduates from high school, then it's to be paid. And it's a catch-22 that respondent is arguing here, because he's saying, well, you can't bring a motion to reduce it to a money judgment because it's never due by virtue of the order. But since you never reduced it to judgment, no interest can be applied. The truth is, if the court says you will pay Ms. Kramer $750,000, that's, you're to pay it now. If the court gives you time to pay it, as in Riley, they gave him, in that case, they gave him 30 days to pay it, then he's given him 30 days. He's not giving him any time to pay it. He's saying, you owe this money and you owe it now, and that money is going to be secured. And that's the situation that we have here. It's untenable that you would say, well, you owe her $750,000, but you, according to respondent, he never has to pay it. It's just not, it doesn't make any sense. So our position is that he ordered the payment of $750,000. He didn't give him 2 years to pay it, 5 years to pay it, 10 years to pay it, or 10 months to pay it. He owed it. If you read the case, I'm sure if you've seen the file, it's unbelievable. But he had the money and he had the assets, and she wasn't even given half of the marital estate in this case. So it's pretty hard to say that he intended it to be paid 10, 15 years later without any interest applying. So that's my answer to that question. And I believe that he doesn't have to say that interest is applied. If you, the statute says it's the award is to be, the interest rate is to be applied by the court administrator upon the entry of judgment. So that's where I'm coming from, is that on May 28th, the judge signed the order. On June 1st, judgment was entered. And according to Riley, just looking at Riley alone, there was never any reduction of that to money judgment. The Court of Appeals said, say, he gave him 30 days, we'll give him that, but he owes it. Otherwise, the entry of judgment triggers the court administrator to calculate that. And I'm not even stopping there. This, I realize that I haven't seen a case on this, but this statute says, and I think rightfully so, that my client is entitled to prejudgment interest on this money. And that goes back to April of 2010. And I'm now halfway through my 14th year on this file, and the respondent has never voluntarily made a payment of any kind. He paid the attorney fee principal just to get out of jail, and he paid it in one lump sum. And we forced the sale of the house, and he interfered with that all along the way, and you can find that in the court proceedings. Filed two bankruptcies. Everyone's entitled to avail themselves of whatever the courts allow, and I respect that. But the facts of the case are that she was excluded from the home in April of 2010 when this action was filed. She was excluded from all assets of the farm. And you may recall that he had an antenuptial agreement, which gave her the shirt on her back. that was declared void by the trial court, and in 2018 was affirmed essentially, other than the calculation of maintenance, was affirmed by the Minnesota Supreme Court. And those, the valuation date was in 2012, but those assets that he has held all this time, he has used for himself, and she has never had any access to it since April of 2010. So in all fairness, justice would, in justice, interest would be due someone in that situation who has been deprived of her property for all this time. I believe that the Riley Court sets this out very well, where the fellow was ordered to pay $30,000. He was supposed to sell the house, or no, he was supposed to do that within 30 days. He didn't do it. And in that court, it was applying the new law, which was the 1984 law that said.
So I'm going to interrupt you because you're running out of time. And I'd like you to explain to me why you believe your client was entitled to pre-judgment interest under the 2014 statute.
The 2014 statutes at 549-09. If you read the 549-09, C1, I and little I say the same rate shall apply to prejudgment interest pursuant to paragraph B.
Okay, but then paragraph B, tell me why paragraph B entitles your client to prejudgment interest. You've cited a provision in the statute that says what the interest rate is, but we've got to look at the paragraph in the statute that describes when you are entitled to prejudgment interest. And I'm not understanding how paragraph B.
Pre-award, in this case, so I call this an award, pre-award interest on pecuniary damages shall be computed as provided in paragraph C at the time of commencement of the action. And that's what we have here. April of 2010, the action was commenced, and she's entitled to pre-award damages, pre-award interest on that amount.
But is this a damage award? This is a division of marital property. It's not like she got $750,000 because she was damaged by husband.
She was awarded that property at on May.
I understand, but do you see the distinction I'm making? In a non-dissolution case, someone has to prove damages to win.
Yeah.
In a dissolution case, there's no claim of damages. There are marital assets which are equitably divided. I'm having a hard time understanding how the division of marital assets is the equivalent of a damage award in any other case where you have to prove damages as an element of your offense. So that's why I'm having a hard time agreeing that paragraph B applies here.
Right. May I answer?
Please.
I understand that, and that's why I would direct the court to the order, to the case of Riley, 385 Northwest 2nd, 883. It's in our situation here. That exact argument was made
And rejected
by the Court of Appeals, and said she's owed that money. She's been deprived of that money since that time. If that's not damages, I understand what you're saying. It's a division. But if I take all of my assets and exclude my wife from them for 5 years before the court orders that I have to give half of them to my wife, her claim includes prejudgment interest. And under the statute, it's not accepted. I would also note to you, Judge
Lumpkin. But Riley's different in that, well, I'm just pointing out a distinction, and tell me if this matters. There was a deadline in the J&D in the Riley case. You have to pay by this date.
Right, but that they weren't talking about prejudgment interest in Riley. They were just talking about post-judgment interest, because the statute at that time did not allow prejudgment interest. And the court says that, say, it says you don't get prejudgment interest, but you get post-judgment interest. And since it says no prejudgment interest, that's one of the reasons why we find there is post-judgment interest. And it also, in Riley, I forget where I was going with this, but he talks about the time value of money and that he owed it to her from the time it was ordered to be paid. In our case, it was ordered to be paid on May 28th, and entry of judgment was June 1st, and that's when it was ordered. The prejudgment.
And so in Riley, the statute at that time expressly prohibited prejudgment interest, but we don't have that.
Correct. But it does.
We don't have it in the 2014 statute.
In the 2014 case, 2014 statute that is now in play on this, there is no exception for family law cases on this interest statute, and there is no exception for prejudgment interest in family law cases like there was in Riley. So I'm just pointing that out, that the legislature did not accept it at this time. And so this business about, it's never been done and all of this kind of thing, if there ever was a case where this should apply, it should apply in this case. It's limited.
Thank you, Mr. Wettering. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you,
sir. Now hear, you're welcome. I will now hear for counsel for the respondent.
Good morning. Daniel Eaton for respondent Robbie Kramer. Appellant's counsel, they're missing a very crucial element in their argument. And that is that there was, in fact, a lien awarded to the appellant. And that makes all the difference here. The law that applies in this case is well-established, simple, and straightforward. When a lien is awarded in connection with a property distribution in a dissolution, interest is only allowed if it is explicitly awarded in the decree. So the analysis is rather simple. All the court has to do is determine first if a lien was awarded to secure the property distribution. If the answer to that is yes, then the court has to look at the decree to see if interest was awarded. If the decree awards interest, the lien recipient gets interest. If it does not award interest, the lien recipient does not get interest. So that's the extent of the analysis the court has to do. There's no question that appellant was granted the lien securing her award.
Before you go further, counsel, could you explain to us why the award of a lien makes the difference?
So first and foremost, if you look at every single case, that is the distinction. And second, the Bakken court discussed.
Is there any case? I mean, I like how you have simply explained a rule of law, but is there any case that states that rule of law? Is there any case that says if a lien was granted, there's no interest unless the district court specifically says so?
Yes. So first of all, that's Erickson, Bakken, all the cases referenced in my briefing state that principle. There's a case, it's not referenced in my briefing, but it's Yontos v. Yontos. It's an unpublished case, 1992 Westlaw 108138. And in that case, the Court of Appeals does explicitly make that distinction. In the Yontos case, it's a bit of the inverse of our current case. The appellant, in Yontos, there was not a lien awarded. And in that case, the appellant was challenging interest that was awarded, saying that it was in an impermissible modification of the decree. But the Yontos court explicitly held that because there, in that case, there was not a lien, it was allowed to impose interest. And it specifically cites to Erickson and Riley to make that distinction, pointing to Erickson saying there was a lien awarded, so therefore no interest, and pointing to Riley saying there was no lien awarded, so there is interest allowed. And so that really is the difference.
Do any of these cases explain why we would have that rule despite the statute, which would indicate, at least as the court viewed it in Riley, that the interest should be automatic?
Yes. So the Bakken court touches on this. And the Bakken court explains that the lien itself is the method of distributing the property. So keep in mind, Ms. Kramer didn't receive nothing. She received a lien. A lien is a thing of value that she received. And the Bakken court explains that the lien is the method of distribution. And so therefore, that lien, so she received what she got. And that lien can only accrue interest if it is awarded in the decree. So that really is the distinction. And if the court reviews every case that's cited to by the parties here, and as far as I've never found a case where there has been a lien awarded and interest granted unless it was awarded in the decree, or you've never found a case. There's not a case where there's interest allowed if it's not awarded in the decree when there is a lien. This is consistent 100% across the board. There's no gray area. And so in this case, the analysis is rather straightforward. We have a lien and we don't have interest in the decree. Therefore, no interest. No interest is allowed on it. I want to touch on the issue of the fact that there wasn't a deadline in the decree. I don't know why that was, but the court did very specifically contemplate that this award was not going to be paid immediately. And that is because the district court did award the permanent maintenance of $862 to be paid by Mr. Kramer to Ms. Kramer until the lien was satisfied. And so the court clearly understood that the award was not going to be paid immediately. The court didn't expect that it would be. It didn't intend that it would be. And it compensated Ms. Kramer accordingly. So the assumption that appellant is making that it had to be paid immediately just doesn't bear out. If it was to be paid immediately, the decree should have said that it was going to be paid immediately. It didn't say that, but the decree did account for the fact that it wouldn't be paid immediately, and Ms. Kramer could receive this additional maintenance indefinitely until it was.
Okay. So, counsel, you, as I understand it, your argument is you have a marital lien. When you get to the point of bringing an enforcement action, and the judge then, as a result of that enforcement, says, you owe this money, interest kicks in at that point.
Yes. So if there was a point where the lien was past due, and again, we don't know exactly when that would be. I mean, we could maybe make the assumption that since it was attached to the homestead, the court assumed it was going to be paid whenever the homestead was sold to refinance. We don't really know, but at some point, Ms. Ms. Kramer could have brought an action, brought a motion in the case saying, Your Honor, we believe this lien is past due for this reason, and therefore, please enter a judgment on it. And the court at that point, I suppose, could have done some analysis to determine whether it was actually past due. If the court did determine that it was past due, the courts could have then entered a money judgment. And from that point, just that point, interest could have started accruing. Not anything before that, but just from the point of a judgment being entered. And if you look at some of the cases where there is some similar issues, if a party goes back to enforce a payment, the court will impose a date that it has to be paid, and then if it doesn't, then it's considered past due. But none of that happened here. So, and I was not involved in this case, so I can't speak to why any of that didn't happen. But this case played out the way it was supposed to play out, at least when it comes to payment on this lien. She was awarded the lien. The property was eventually sold. She received full payment when it was sold. During the interim, she received the $862 a month in additional maintenance to compensate her for the time that passed. And so this is really a pretty straightforward analysis. We have the lien. There's no question, and there's no question that interest wasn't awarded. So there's just the appellant is trying to shortcut this and apply the set of rules that come in and play if there's not a lien awarded, but that's just not the case. Without the award of interest, when we have the lien, you just don't get it. You don't get interest. And unless the court has any further questions, I'll conclude.
Thank you, Mr. Eaton. Mr. Wettering, you'll have the last word, sir.
Thank you, Judge. I would respectfully disagree with counsel on what law applies here. We have the law of the statute that has been changed over the years, and at the time that this statute was in force, this case was decided, and the interest statute on an award, I would put to the court, lien or no lien, that statute applies. I think all the court, there never was a summary real estate disposition filed in this case. My client never was entitled on this property as it was owned prior to her, prior to the marriage. It was owned by the respondent. And the court was extremely aware of the assets that this fellow had, and he ordered him to pay a sum. He secured it with a lien on the real estate the fellow owned and on his crops and machinery and equipment that the fellow owned. And the idea then that she should not be entitled to interest when the statute does not accept it.
Counsel, Judge Larkin, could I just ask a question? And I've read all these cases. I'm not finding any case that does what you're suggesting, except Riley. And in Riley, there was a specific payment date. And we frame the issue as did the trial court, err in refusing an award of interest on the cash settlement not paid to appellant until 16 months after the order mandating the payment was entered. So it seems to me the only way you get to the point of saying, well, Riley dictates the award of interest in this case, is to read the J&D as requiring an immediate payment, which it doesn't say. But I mean, I'm just trying to figure out how you make Riley work. And it seems to me if a person were to conclude, okay, the J&D requires an immediate payment, it wasn't paid, so interest starts going from the date of the J&D. But it does seem curious to me that we don't have a single case that says that. I mean, we don't have a case. Can you cite me to a case where we've got a J&D with a cash award and a lien? Nothing is said about when it's due, and the court said, yep, you get interest from the date of the J&D. That does seem to be an outlier, because in all these cases I've looked at, you either had a deadline for the payment, you had an enforcement action, which resulted in another judgment and interest kicked in there. But it just seems to me that if the rule is that everybody gets interest on any payment awarded in a J&D from the date of the J&D award, even if the J&D didn't set forth a deadline for payment, we'd have cases that say that. So your proposition seems sort of out of line with all of the case law.
Well, Judge, I can only say that the court's own rule on applying interest on awards says that the interest accrues from the date of entry of judgment. So if I don't have it in front of me right now, but if you were just to look at Minnesota interest on awards, it would say exactly what 54909 says. When there's an award, the court administrator is to calculate interest based upon 54909 from the date of the entry of the judgment. And judgment was entered on this on June 1st of 2015. Then it goes on to say,
my bad. I'm looking at the syllabus point from Riley on this issue. And it says, a dissolution judgment awarding money to a party accrues interest on the unpaid balance from the time the judgment says payment is due until it is paid. So in that case, the judgment said when payment was due. In our case, the judgment doesn't say when payment is due. Well, isn't that a significant distinction?
No, and I think that absent a, okay, so if we go this way, Judge Larkin, if we go this way and you, then the payment is never due.
Isn't that okay? Why didn't at that time, during one of the previous appeals, why didn't your client raise this issue with the court? Why didn't your client say, Judge, regarding the J&D, we'd like you to modify it to put a payment deadline? It seems to me that you're trying to essentially change the J&D.
Actually, there are cases that say that you're modified by not awarding interest. In this case, there are...
But there are also cases that say awarding interest results in a modification, which is not permissible. But so my question is, why wasn't this issue raised in the beginning when the J&D issued this fact of no payment deadline?
My position on it was that the statute required the interest to be calculated by the court administrator's office. We were never given any idea that that wasn't the case. And there's no way for, we, and the respondent's own attorneys during the sale proceedings on the house filed a motion because my client did not want to accept the amount that was being offered on the house. They filed a motion to suspend accumulation of interest on the judge, on the award during that time.
Your time has expired. I have let you go on a little bit. So the matter is deemed submitted. We appreciate the thoughtfulness of the arguments, and we will issue our decision in 90 days.
Thank you.
You're welcome.